there seems to be a thing in this country where it's like, it's inherently unfair for people to be rich, therefore we should go after them.
Yeah.
The problem with that is that, well, they are rich though, aren't they?
Yeah.
And they can buy an airline ticket. You can't lock them up and keep them in the UK. And so they just go.
Welcome to the Tax Compass podcast, navigating UK tax for expats with LSR partners.
Welcome back to the Tax Compass podcast from LSR Partners with me, Simon Rue, and my business partner, Laura San.
Hi.
Today, we're going to talk about something that's been in the papers. It's going to continue to be in the papers. And it's all around sort of a combination of the changes that have now come into force to do with non-dom and the removal of the domicile concept and the non-dom system and the remittance basis system. And then also talk about what's ended up happening sort of more from a perspective of anecdotally what we're seeing from a lot of our clients, especially those who are at the higher end of wealth and income. So Laura, just as a starting point for this, can you just run through what's changed in terms of the removal of the remittance basis? And I think the really key thing for the purposes of this conversation is about the change in the, if you like, the levels in terms of time limits, because you could have been non-dom for a lot longer than you can now use the FIG regime.
Yeah. So the historic regime was if you were in a non-domiciled individual, you could elect to be taxed on the remittance basis of taxation, which meant that if you kept your overseas income and gains outside of the UK and didn't remit them, then you wouldn't have to pay tax on them. The benefit to that for most people, or for the really high net worth individuals, was that you could potentially utilise this scheme for up to 15 years from your arrival in the UK. The first 7 years was kind of relatively cost effective, in as far as it was just lost personal allowance and annual exemption, most of which wouldn't necessarily have impacted. And then remittance basis charges of 30,000 and 60,000, and I think towards back end 90,000 per year. So that was the old regime, and as you say, like, it was available for 15 years. So there were a significant amount of non-doms in the UK who found this to be particularly, you know, tax advantageous and attractive, and brought in quite a lot of.
Well, and that's interesting. Like, so I was looking at some stats. And even though you're the stats person, I actually did look at some stats. What was really interesting is, and I sort of went back, and I think it's worth pointing out at this stage, the politician who started all this was George Osborne, who basically announced, I think it was in about 2012-ish, that they were looking at going to get rid of this. And it's amazing that it's actually taken over 10 years for it to actually happen.
Yeah.
But again, stupid political point scoring. The Labour Party would stand up and go, oh, these people don't pay their fair share. And then the Tories were put under pressure, and, you know, the Tories are bolstering this and that and the other thing. Oh, we're going to get rid of it and everyone should pay their fair share. I love the NHS, you know, all that good stuff, if that's the right expression. Your average non-dom taxpayer in the UK pays £170,000 of tax in the UK. They almost certainly send their kids to private school, so they're not using the education system, and they all have private medical insurance, so they don't use the NHS. So that's what they're contributing. Your average taxpayer in the UK pays £7,000 of tax a year and will use the NHS and will use the education system. So the idea, just statistically, to say that non-doms aren't paying their fair share is absurd. So that system's gone out the window.
Yeah.
What's the new system?
So the new system is called the Foreign Income and Gain Regime, but it's only available for those who are long-term non-residents, so who've been non-resident for 10 consecutive years, and that's by means of the statutory residence test, not the kind of people who've left the UK and spread their living patterns between the UK and another country and been considered treaty resident in the other country. But so for non-resident for 10 years, for the first 4 years further to their arrival from the UK, they can elect to be taxed under the Foreign Income and Gain Regime. It's different to the remittance basis by the sounds, we obviously haven't seen what it's the reality of the situation, but it sounds like it's going to be more time consuming to do. Under the remittance basis, you could just say, I've left it outside of the UK.
No reporting.
Yeah. I'm claiming this remittance basis, but I'm not telling you anything about what's going on outside of the UK because you don't need to know. Under this new regime, you have to quantify exactly what is going on. You have to tell HMRC exactly what income and gains you've had that year and make the claim for any sort of relief that's available. And if you don't, it's taxable, which again, I think from HMRC's perspective, they're just trying to get an understanding as well. What can we be looking at after the first 4 years?
But the problem, right, is that, and this comes on to the real issue this is creating. So it's only 4 years. So yeah. Anyone who's been claiming the remittance basis is based in the UK, but has been here for longer than 4 years, they're stuffed.
Yeah.
And it's literally, oh, I'm now switching to worldwide income and gains being taxed.
Yeah.
And then the other part of it is that, So two things to me that make no sense. One is, it's not like there aren't other countries offering up, you know, incentive-based ways of getting ultra-rich people to move to their countries, which I'll come on to in a minute. But the other thing is that, I mean, if you're... I mean, Lakshmi Mittal has been in the papers about someone who said that they're going to leave.
Yeah.
So I think he's worth in the region of $12-15 billion.
Yeah.
You know, Mittal Steel, Mittal Industries in India. I mean, even if he didn't mind paying the tax, the thought of the process he'd have to go through to try and put that on a tax return is just ridiculous. And so people like that are just like, well, I'll just go and live somewhere else. I'll go to Italy because there I just know I just need to write them a check for 200,000 euros.
Yeah.
And everything outside of Italy is none of their business.
Yeah. It is one of those. And then when you see somebody like that, when you look at the stats about how many regular taxpayers have to kind of be considered to kind of, or to be included to kind of cover the tax gap, because yes, there might be millions, billions that's not being declared in terms of income.
But wouldn't you rather, but the thing that's so absurd is that you're just going to have nothing.
Yeah.
Because if you're Lakshmi Mittal, you're obviously going to be bringing in millions of quid because you've got a massive house and all the rest of it.
Yeah.
So it's not like you're not going to be paying a very significant amount of tax to HMRC.
Yeah.
So why would you ever introduce a system that gets all of those people to go, oh, I'll just leave?
Exactly.
And this comes on to a really interesting situation we've been helping a client with literally day to day at the moment.
Yeah.
So she, long-term UK resident, she's actually domiciled in the UK. And this is a slightly different issue. And it comes, I guess, to the next part of this, which is a combination of a change in the rules, which is incentivizing non-doms to leave. But it's also the changes to the rules are also encouraging domiciled individuals to leave because of the rates of tax they're paying.
I would say that that's what we are seeing more of, actually.
A lot more, yeah.
We've seen a few of our non-dom clients who've gone, actually, no, I'm going now. Thank you very much. But the majority of like new clients who are getting in touch with us are actually UK domiciled, who have just gone, do you know what, the government have just pushed us just that touch too far.
Yeah, and like, so we were saying that, and this comes to capital gains, so there are two points on the changes to capital gains that came through back in October. So just to refresh on that, the rates were 10% and 20%, depending on your income tax brackets.
Yeah.
They changed to 18% to 24%.
Yeah.
And they thought they were being clever, I guess, by aligning them with residential property tax rates.
Yeah.
The thing about residential property tax rates in the UK is that they're in the UK. You can't pick the property up and move off with it. And they're always taxable, whether you're resident or not resident.
Yes.
But for a lot of people, they look at it and go, 10% I can live with. I think most people feel that being taxed on something at 10% doesn't feel like it's a problem.
Yeah.
20%, well, it's a bit higher, but that's the basic rate of income tax. I can potentially live with that. And then you might say, well, 18% and 24% aren't that different, but they are actually quite different when you lump them together, right?
I think that's it. I think, again, I don't know quite what it feels like. It's just the straw that's broken the camel's back.
So I think it's that. And I think the other issue that the government clearly just did not think about for some bizarre reason, and I guess this is partly sort of Treasury orthodoxy and this idea that no, it's not true that people will leave. So this client that we've been helping with, just to put a bit of context around it, she has got equity in a company that IPO'd back in January. the stock price has gone up 100%, or sorry, no, not 100%, it's gone up 100 times since IPO. She's in an auto sale program because she's a connected party. She's realizing gains of getting on for $200,000 a day through this auto sale process. And she's looked at it and gone, right, that's a $50,000 a day tax bill in the UK. Why don't I just go to Italy, which is where she's looking to go to? And as long as she can break residence, 4 days of those gains will pay her annual bill that she has to pay under the Italian regime. And so she's in a situation of saying, I can pay 200,000 euros to the Italians, or I can pay 2.5 million to the UK. The food in Italy is probably better. They've got nice museums. The weather's probably better.
Yeah.
They've got nice wine. Why wouldn't I go to Italy? And that's what people do. And I just don't understand why politicians can't get their head around that. And and the problem, again, is that the people who get harmed by these decisions are precisely not the people they're targeting. Because the people who they're targeting just say, well, I'll just leave. Thanks.
That's it. I was going to say they have the money to be able to do that, don't they? Like,
that's the whole point. Yeah. I mean, and this is it, right? So when you attack rich people, and the discussion is always about, like, well, it's not. There seems to be a thing in this country where it's like it's inherently unfair for people to be rich. Therefore, we should go after them.
Yeah.
The problem with that is that they are rich though, aren't they?
Yeah.
And they can buy an airline ticket. You can't lock them up and keep them in the UK. And so they just go.
And the thing at the moment with the UK. Yes, we have anti-avoidance rules in terms of temporary non-residents, and it has to be a long-term solution. You can't just go, I'm going to leave, realise everything, and then come straight back. So it is, and again, from a UK tax perspective, again, that's just kind of forcing the higher net worth individuals who are taking that route out of the UK for even longer. But it, I suppose they have the ability to do that. What we don't have in the UK at the moment, potentially never, which some countries do, which is that kind of looking at, well, what was the value when you left the UK? So there's some sort of exit tax. Which, as I say, certain countries do, and certain countries will look at it and go, right, well, you know, our standard approach is we'll look at the uplift in value during the period when you were resident. In the UK, it's an all or nothing system. So for people who arrive in the UK, realise gains, maybe that they've owned for many, many years when they were non-resident, but they realise the gain when they're UK resident, they will pay capital gains tax on the full uplift rather than just the portion. But equally, it does allow people to take advantage of the fact that actually, yeah, I can up and leave, become a UK tax non-resident and realise gains, substantial gains, and pay no UK capital gains tax.
Yeah, and go somewhere where they're keen for me to be able to pay them there. And, you know, again, coming back to my numbers, like your average non-dom pays 170 grand of tax in the UK, your average taxpayer pays 7 grand. Unfortunately, they're just the reality. So most people look at that and go, my God, you must be wealthy if you're paying that much tax. And it's like, you just got to accept that in a capitalist economy, you do have people who are very, very well paid or who are risk takers, who are entrepreneurs, who are multimillionaires and all the rest of it. And they do pay tax and a lot of it. But everyone gets to that breaking point of saying, you know, there are potholes, the trains don't work, the NHS doesn't work. Why am I doing this and paying all this money when I don't really get anything for it? And as I say, I think the other thing that's so fascinating has been since COVID, people really can work remotely.
Yeah.
And that's been a big change, right?
I think it's been a really big change. And I think, I mean, I don't know about you, but I just, the amount of mobility you seem to be seeing nowadays, I think it's almost something people have become aware of. This, like previously, if people were unhappy, like they wouldn't necessarily have thought, oh, I know what I'll do, I'm going to leave the UK. Whereas nowadays it seems to be a bit more, I don't know.
Normal.
Yes.
And the other thing that's so amazing, and this really blew my mind when this came up, I remember getting a call a year and a half ago, and I was actually in Wolverhampton Hospital. Do you remember I had that eye problem?
Yeah.
And they've got an eye centre down there. Anyway, this person called me up, and of course I was stood in an NHS hospital, absolute pandemonium, usual story. And the person who called me, I had an initial meeting with them. They work for the NHS in South Wales, and they were a physiotherapist. I was like, oh, right, what are you? She's like, oh, no, I'm resident in Spain. I do it remotely. It's like, you do physio remotely. And she was like, some special source of physio or something, I don't know. But it was like, so you've got that system, you've got our tax system, and then you've got the biggest employer in the UK, which happens to be a government entity, allowing people to work remotely from Spain and therefore not pay UK tax. The whole thing, but it's that whole thing that well, that feels a bit weird. Surely if you're a government employee, you know.
Yeah.
Surely you should change the rules so that's sourced to the UK or something.
Yeah.
But again, it's this whole point of, there's been a real sea change for people being able to do their work remotely. We see so many people now who are moving overseas. They've still worked for a UK employer.
Yeah.
And then they go, well, actually, the UK employer's getting a bit worked up. I'll switch to being a contractor and all the rest. There are so many ways you can continue to basically do your job, but do it in a way that means you don't get caught up in paying into the wrong national insurance system or whatever it might be. And I do wonder whether the next thing we're going to see out of this government is a change to the way residency works. I think the wealth tax point, I just think could completely blow the British economy up in one go.
Yeah.
And the reason I say that is that because the British economy works, it's such a heavily service-based economy.
Yeah.
The problem is that you can do that from anywhere. And again, this is what's encouraging. Like the number of people we know who are working remotely, so many of them are in service jobs. They're lawyers, they're people like us. I mean, like ultimately you and I could do what we do from anywhere. There's nothing, no reason for us to be in the UK to do it.
True.
Oh, that's a good idea. we'll come back to that. I think the issue you just are going to have is that, okay, we'll change the residency system. Is it time that, or are we heading towards a time where the statutory residence test gets changed?
I like the statutory residence test. I think that's why they can't do it this exit tax at the moment, because it is, because of the way the statutory residence test applies, you can kind of be UK tax resident 1 year, non-resident the next year. And it's purely based upon where your days of physical presence are. So you could end up having, you probably end up having kind of quite easy manipulation of you know, crystallization of certain gains, kind of. So I think it's one of those.
Yeah, they'd have, that's a good point, actually, isn't it? Because they'd have to change the whole of the statutory residence test to make it work with an exit tax.
Yeah.
Because like we have a lot of Canadian clients who they have an exit tax.
Yes.
But they stay, even though they're living in the UK, they actually stay Canadian tax resident.
They do, yeah.
And then they rely on the tax treaty to make sure they're not being double taxed.
Yeah.
So that's interesting, isn't it? And that's,
South Africa's similar as well.
Yep. And then we know other countries. I think Norway had one for a bit, and then they realised they weren't making any money from it and got rid of it. But, you know, there's been a lot of stuff in the media recently about the so-called, well, it's not the so-called, it is called the Laffer Curve. And it really does feel that we're at that point. The Office for Budget Responsibility has said that they think over this parliament, the capital gains tax take is going to be £31 billion lower than they thought it was going to be because the rates went up. Because people, the thing with income is you can't not get income if you're in a job. So it's very hard to change your tax. But if you're in capital gains tax areas, it's like, well, I'm just not going to sell the asset and then it's not going to crystallise.
Or I'm going to leave the UK and
exactly
crystallise it outside.
Yeah, I think I really do see this becoming a real albatross around the government's neck. And, you know, maybe the interesting one to sort of sign off with on this, another good anecdote. There's a restaurant in London called Hakkasan, which is a high-end Chinese restaurant. And I was talking to a mate of mine who actually works for a guy who's been in the paper recently for exactly this thing of leaving the UK and going and trying to be resident somewhere else. And he was saying that Hakkasan had to shut down one of their restaurants in Mayfair. And in their other one, they've had to close the floor because all their clients have gone. And these are non-dom people who've just up sticks and off they've gone.
Yeah.
And so it just really does feel that it's going to be so interesting, isn't it? Because like, obviously the thing to do is to get rid of the new system and go back to the old system or manipulate the new system so that you give people longer and all the rest of it.
Yeah.
But I guess politically that's going to be impossible for this government.
I'd say so. And I think as well, I think the stats are all going to be skewed for a few years because of the temporary repatriation facility, which is encouraging people who have been on the remittance basis to remit income to the UK or designate income to be remitted at a lower rate of tax, which is going to encourage people to take advantage of that. That might skew it again. Non-DOMs who can take advantage of rebasing from a capital gains tax perspective as well. There are certain carrots that have been dangled to try and encourage for the first couple of years a bit of a tax uplift. So I don't think we'll necessarily even see what the full picture is.
Years. whenever they disclose the income they think they're getting from things, no one can ever audit it. Yeah. So, you know, you get it into the Treasury, you put a good bit of a political slant on how you're going to disclose the information and you work on that basis. It's what I like about those sorts of anecdotal stories about restaurant closures.
Yeah.
Because that you can't argue with that. We're not saying anything other than the fact that why is it that at the high-end restaurant where you're probably paying, you know, 700 or 800 quid for a meal before booze, why has it shut down? Well, it's got to have something to do with the amount of rich people who are going into it.
Yeah.
And so, you know, you can draw your own conclusions. And look, I've noticed it. I was down in London a couple of weeks ago and wandering around that particular part, you know, sort of Mayfair, Green Park. It is, like, quieter somehow. Yeah. So it's interesting. So just coming round back to this whole thing about, like, okay, right, everyone's leaving. I think one of the things that it was interesting that came out of the work that we've been doing for our client who's going to Italy was this whole point. And this is what, who is it? I can't remember his name. He's the co-owner of Aston Villa. Sawiris, I think his surname is. He's been in the paper a lot because he's also gone to Italy, so he's left. So he'll still co-own Aston Villa, but he won't pay nearly as much tax as he was paying in the UK. All came down to what a home was. Do you want to just talk a little bit about the second automatic UK test? Because we get so many people, don't we, who come along and they go, I'm not tax resident in the UK because I won't have been here for 183 days. They've got this fixation on the 183 days point.
Which is really...
But it never really comes to it, does it?
No, not really.
But I think the second automatic UK test is a really interesting one of something people should be aware of if they're thinking of breaking residency, because one of the things that we've had to move fast on for our client is all about that test.
So the second automatic UK test is having your only home in the UK, but it's not looking at the whole tax year, which I think is something that kind of catches people out.
It does.
You're looking at a 91-day consecutive period, of which only 30 days fall within the tax year. And during that window, you have no overseas home or any overseas home or only overseas homes on which you've spent fewer than 30 days in during the tax year. You also have to spend 30 days in your own home during the tax year as well, or your UK home, sorry, during the tax year. So it's one of those that tends to catch people maybe who are looking at leaving the UK, who have been living in the UK as UK tax resident and leave midway through the year. That's a test that will generally tend to
catch them.
Albeit there's always split year treatment that's available as well.
But just on the split year thing that I think is interesting. So again, coming back to our client, because she's realising gains right at the start of April, right at the start of the tax year, she needs to be full year non-resident, which is where this test has become so problematic. So that she's not taxed on the gains that she's realising at the moment, even though she's living in the UK at the moment, she needs to make sure she breaks it for the full year.
Yes.
Because if she had split year, it'd be like, okay, well, you can have split year after whatever day if it applies. For her, it wouldn't, because, of course, she doesn't want to give up her UK home, which is, again, why it's become such an issue.
And isn't working.
Yeah. So that's really, really important, isn't it, to be aware of that test?
Yes.
Because you can literally spend 30 days in the UK in a tax year and you're full year tax resident.
You can also, in principle, spend one day in the UK and be tax resident as well. Well, probably not actually one day, because you get caught, but the first automatic overseas test would get you, or you'd be non-resident that way. But you can, with one day working, get caught by that full-time work inside the UK, which is the third automatic UK test. Sorry, we're getting a bit geeky.
No, but it's good, because I don't want us to get into the real nitty-gritty. I think what we want to try and get across to our audience is if you know, if we look back at what we talked about, loads of people are leaving.
Yeah.
Loads of people are leaving because they don't like the fact that the non-dom thing's gone away.
Yeah.
The new system's come in that actually does look very attractive on the face of it to new arrivals into the UK, but you've got to have been outside the UK for 10 years. So it's not like people who've just been out for a couple of years can benefit.
Yeah.
There's the issue with just the overall rates of tax and the way that we do seem to have got to that point where we're over the top of the Laffer curve. Tax revenues are actually dropping with rates going up. So it's interesting to think about ways in which a government that is, you know, committing more to defence, wants to spend more money, as a Labour government always does. And then, people listening to this thing, actually, yeah, I might leave.
Yeah.
But then remember that when you are thinking about leaving, you need to plan for it.
Yes.
You need to understand fully what makes you a resident. The key thing you were just saying there about, you can become a full year resident in the UK by spending a very limited amount of time in the UK. If you're someone like our client who doesn't work, who wants to maintain their UK home, there actually isn't a way of splitting the year once you've become UK tax resident.
No.
And so if she didn't get a new home within that first 30-day window of the tax year, she was stuffed, basically.
Yeah.
So it's really important that people think about that. And how many departure briefings have we done in the last 6 months?
A lot.
Yeah, a lot. hence why Laura loves the statutory residence test.
I do.
She's taking medication. We're hoping she'll get over it. So it's really, really important for people to think about that.
Most definitely.
So if you are thinking of leaving, you know who to call. And Laura literally loves spending all of her time talking about the statutory residence test. There's no one, she's forgotten more about it than I know. So do get in touch.
Thanks for listening to the Tax Compass podcast, brought to you by LSR Partners, where we help you pay the right tax in the right place at the right time. Book a call with us. Details are in the show notes.